You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Tanya Pinkins, maker, actor, singer. I'm not a dancer, definitely not. Don't ask me. Educator, author, painter, and I'm tired today, a little groggy because I was up till about 3 a.m. watching the first movie of my guest today. He's blushing over there. I was up all night watching Hackers. Oh. What a great movie. Just join me in welcoming actor, teacher, director, producer, Peter Kim.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much, Tanya. And that is really funny that you bring it up because it is hitting its 25th anniversary.
Really?
Yes. And there's apparently this really big kind of event that's happening in Las Vegas in August that I was just invited to.
Ooh.
So I'm trying to figure out my schedule. Hopefully I can make it. But yeah, that is a blast from the past. But I will say people to this day still like stop me. And it's so fascinating. It really spoke to people at that time.
And it's a good movie. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, I definitely think it was kind of ahead of its time, mm-hmm. you know, and you know, it was Angelina Jolie's first feature.
Yes.
And it was crazy.
But the whole cast stuff, Fisher Stevens, Johnny Lee Miller, yep. Wendell Pierce. I mean, like, what a kick-ass cast.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I mean, it was definitely my first feature film that I'd ever done. It was definitely the most, like, you know, at that point, I had
Razor and Blade.
Yes. I was Blade of Razor and Blade. At that point, I had just done like my first off-Broadway show, which was, it was called New York Rock by mm-hmm. Yoko Ono. It was a rock opera.
Okay.
Back at the WPA.
Yes,
do you remember? Yeah,
I worked
know.
At the WPA.
Yeah, it was such a great place. Anyway, so I did that show and then I booked Hackers. And it's actually like a really meaningful experience for me because I was like a freshman in college at the time, and my parents were like, there are no artists in my family. My parents are immigrants from Korea. They're self-made, you know, they came to the States really poor, you know, and you know, so stability and was really important to them, and pursuing a career in the arts was like not really
what they thought of as stability. Yeah,
I would say, yes.
Though I will have to say that for myself, that's like how people always projected on me. And as I stand where I am now, like I'm real stable. Like my retirement looks really, really good. Like my career in the arts set me up to have a really nice life. Yeah. So
I mean, hold up though. But let's also say this is Tanya Pinkins we're talking about here. Okay, so may we all be as lucky being born with that talent. But yeah, so that movie actually, I invited my parents. We shot in New York and in London. And when we were in New York, I invited my parents to set. And I think when they saw like the sheer magnitude of like the expense actually that was
yes.
being put into a feature film,
yes,
you know, like a commercial feature film, not like an indie film, they I think got it. They were like, oh, you know, they're like, oh, okay. And then they knew how much I was getting paid for it and stuff, and they were like, oh, okay. So that experience actually gave them, I think, the confidence in me to actually be able to pursue a career in the arts.
Are you their only child?
No, I have 3 older sisters
okay.
who are phenomenal and amazing. We're super close. But I am the youngest of 4 and I am the only boy. So in Korean culture, there's a lot of pressure there. And then you add on top the fact that I'm gay.
Oh.
Like that definitely is that's worthy of a whole podcast in and of itself.
When did you come out?
I came out to, I think myself, I would say probably in like my senior year of high school.
Okay.
But that was just to myself. And
okay.
My best friend to this day, I told her that I thought I was bisexual. And then I think it was my freshman year of of college that I came out to myself and then came out to other people. And right around that time was when I was doing Hackers, actually.
Oh.
And, you know, the extraordinary Darren Lee, who plays Razor in the movie, you know, at that point, I didn't know a lot of gay men, okay. in particular of Asian descent.
Okay.
And Darren Lee, if people who are listening don't know, Darren Lee has like 12 Broadway shows under his belt. Wow. You know, like this guy was like, I mean, he's an amazing performer, but he was killing it on the Broadway scene at that time. And I remember meeting him once we got cast and just being really in awe of him and also realizing like, oh, like you can be an out gay man and like it's okay. And I think even when we were shooting it, we didn't really talk about my sexuality or anything, but I think a few weeks into production, I eventually did. And so yeah, that experience on that movie was really important to me in many, many ways.
And then when you told the parents?
Yeah, I came out to my parents probably in my mid-20s.
Okay.
And it was definitely hard. I mean, I will...
Here's the question that I have before we come, because we get a lot of coming out stories.
Sure.
I'm interested in the not coming out stories, you know, where you're still inside and you can't, and you know, the awkwardness that it has to be to, you know, your parents are telling them they want the kids. I can imagine, like, when are you getting married? And when are we going to get the grandkids? Like, what is that piece?
I think, you know, people say it all the time, but like coming out is a process and you have to come out multiple times in your life.
Mm.
And so, you know, first step was coming out to myself. And then I came out to my sisters actually before telling my parents. And then it was actually a few years between my sisters knowing and my parents finding out.
Did they know?
My sisters?
I mean, like, I remember I had a lot of guy friends in high school who were like in love with me, but I knew they were gay.
Right.
And so like, they were just, you know, telling me how much they were in love with me. And I was like, one day you'll figure that out. I mean, I didn't tell them that. But
right,
like,
right.
You know, so it's like, did your sisters, were they like, I think, would a mother know that?
Yeah, you know, I think my sisters probably had suspicions.
Okay.
But they, you know, like I grew up in a very Catholic family. My mom was going to be a nun before she met my dad. I have a uncle who is a Catholic priest and has a he just retired, but he had a congregation in the Bronx for like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, being raised so Catholic, yeah. I think there were a lot of blind, like
I was raised Catholic. I know.
Oh yeah. So you're, and you know,
yeah,
just not,
yeah.
It's kind of like, you can't even really
yeah.
imagine it. So why even bother?
Yeah.
So with my parents, you know, I didn't come out to them until I was financially stable. And that was a conscious decision on my part because, you know, through college, my parents supported me and post-college, you know, they helped me out. And so I knew that it was a real possibility that I would just get disowned from the family. Mm. So I made sure that I was able to take care of myself before doing so. And
but that's a hard burden to bear, thinking that they might disown me. They clearly don't.
They did not. Yeah, they were really supportive. They were supportive in the best way that they could have. And basically, I have never been disowned by them. They've always, you know, I know for a fact they love me 100%. But it was definitely a struggle. And then, yeah, I guess that was more of my practicality, my practical mind.
Do you think
mind.
The sisters might have like told, prepped them for it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah. No. I think my mom sort of had suspicions, mm-hmm. But my dad was completely taken aback by the whole thing.
Okay.
And then, you know, I don't know about you, but my parents told my sisters and me, like, they don't want to meet anybody unless you're going to get married to them.
Oh.
It was like, no boyfriends, like, don't bring anybody home unless you're going to marry them. Yeah.
Wow.
So that, no pressure. But so I took that to heart and I had boyfriends, you know, at the time and throughout, but until I met my husband, Michael, I did not invite anyone home or introduce them to anyone.
But marriage, gay marriage wasn't even...
It wasn't.
So did I not meet him till then?
No. I guess in my mind, it was like, well, as long as I know that this is like...
The person,
okay. Then I'm not going to... But that was about 10 years after... No, not 10 years. Probably like 5 to 7 years after I came out to them that I introduced them to Michael.
Wow.
Yeah. But even then, I'm spilling the beans because I think it's important for people to hear. You know, it wasn't until Michael and I decided to get married that once again, it was a real kind of reckoning with my parents it was yet again like another coming out.
Right.
Because I think on some level, they always hoped that
it you change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even though like Michael and I were together for 10 years before we got married, and he was welcome though to like family events. He was welcome to Christmas. Like he got Christmas gifts. Like he was definitely, you know, welcomed. But it was this thing around marriage. And I think for them being so Catholic, for them, marriage is a sacrament.
Mm.
It's not just like a civil union. There's
right.
a whole other component to it. And, which I totally get, you know, but we didn't get married in a church. We did not want
that.
We weren't asking for the sacrament of marriage.
Right, right,
we just
right,
wanted
right.
the legal rights.
It's weird to think of it as a sacrament when at the time of its sort of invention, women and children were property. Mm-hmm. You know, you're having a sacrament with something that's considered some property.
Interesting. I never thought of it that way.
You know?
Yeah.
No agency. That property doesn't really have agency in this process. Yeah. So, you know, that hypocrisy of Catholicism. But the Catholicism, I think of myself as a recovering Catholic, and I see how it seeps into so many ways I look at things. You know,
yeah.
I'm still having to resist those just assumptions that the world works in a certain way that it doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, I will say even like this podcast with you and talking about this, this is like a 2-decade journey for myself. I mean, I've been out to myself and I have never hid my sexuality in professionally or anything, but it was certainly something that I kept in mind, you know, especially as the conversation around representation of the LGBTQ community has shifted so much that I feel more comfortable talking about it. And it wasn't until I got married 5 years ago where it all sort of, I don't know. I have to give credit to my therapist because this is a therapist I've been seeing for like 20 years. And she helped me come out to my parents. And she's phenomenal. And it was actually her idea for me to get married.
Wow.
Because she felt like it would be a really wonderful way to marry. It would be a great way to. I was real good at compartmentalizing my life. Mm-hmm. And it would be a way to synthesize all of those things. Which she was 100% right. So since being married 5 years ago, I feel different about my own sexuality and talking about it, my own comfort level. And I think it's not a surprise that my career has shifted in that time period.
How so?
Well, so, you know, I've been in this biz acting professionally for actually almost 30 years now.
Wow, yeah, old enough for that.
Started real young in the fetus. So I think on some level I wasn't kind of ready for the spotlight, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then definitely I stepped away from the biz. Like I took a hard out about 5 years ago. And actually, at that point, it was really interesting. It kind of opened up all these other doors.
Mm-hmm.
Like literally the day after I told my manager and my agents that I was stepping away, I got a call from my friend Susie Agins, who's a really wonderful director, who happened to be teaching at Princeton at the time in the theater department. And she called me and was like, "Hey, would you want to direct a show on campus?" And mm-hmm. I was like, I've never really directed before. But I met with her and then she convinced me somehow and I interviewed for the job and I got it. And that literally...
You still lecture at Princeton now,
Yeah. So that was 4 years ago where I directed a show. And then subsequently I was brought on to teach acting there.
Okay.
So that was like a real opening to this other creative path for me in terms of directing and teaching.
Right.
And before that, a few years before that, I was producing with NATCO, the National Asian American Theater Company.
Mia
Yeah, Mia's the best.
Do you have any challenges with your acting students of just respect for you because you're an Asian person? Because I certainly do as a black teacher.
Really?
Oh my God, yes.
Really?
I think I'm giving up teaching all these little white children.
Whoa, fascinating.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Are you teaching at the conservatory? You're teaching at the conservatory.
I was teaching at NYU.
Yeah. See, yeah. I teach, so at Princeton, you can't major in theater.
Okay. So people have had to have chosen this class.
Yes, and a lot of, and I teach an intro to acting course, so it's for many of them, and this is really great about the program, they've never done acting before. They have no idea about theater, so it's a real first time experience.
Okay.
So I find that the challenge with that is that I'm up, like, you know, we as performers, like, we're expressive with our bodies, our voice, our feelings, you know, that's part of our job to be connected to that stuff. And for them, they've never really been asked to access those parts of themselves. So that is really the challenge.
Okay.
And I think being an Asian man, teaching the course, it actually has welcomed more students who typically don't feel welcome in the theater to take this class. Because I've had really, really diverse classes.
Oh, wonderful.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
But can you talk more about what you were just saying? Because I think that is fascinating, because I have not experienced that.
I think that, like, there's a sense for me that it doesn't matter that I have this career and that I have these awards and that I've done anything. I'm just not treated with any level of respect.
That is
crazy. Just not. I mean, certainly that's not every student.
Yeah.
But I remember a student I had, this wasn't an NYU student, but going around and saying I was a misguided teacher, telling other teachers, even black teachers, that I was a misguided teacher because I made people feel things, you know, and she didn't think that theater should have to, actors shouldn't feel things and audiences shouldn't feel things. And that was very misguided of me. So I was like, okay.
So that student is no longer an actor. I mean,
that student was a director.
I was going to say that is definitely.
That was a director.
That is something a director would say. No offense to the directors, but like a bad director would say that.
You know, I'm sure she'll be very, very successful. I had some students, some of my bad reviews were how punitive it was of me to have them read August Wilson monologues. So I'm like, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm like, I don't know. I feel like I need some diversity in my classrooms, or I'm not willing to be in a classroom if there isn't some diversity.
That's interesting because, the classrooms that I'm in, fortunately, are quite diverse. I have not had to teach a course where I am the only person of color in the room, which I would imagine would be tricky.
So I'm going to out you in another way now.
Oh boy. Okay.
Oh, are you ready?
Yeah, do it.
You are Korean. Does that mean South Korean?
Yes.
But you told me you are not into South Korean horror, and it is the moment of Parasite. Come on, now, how does this happen?
Well, okay, so this is, okay, first of all, I think Parasite is a masterpiece.
Yes.
It is a masterpiece.
But if you're like me and you're like, obsessed with South Korean horror, you're like, it's a masterpiece, but like, that's just what South Koreans do.
I mean, I'm not going to disagree with you there. Koreans don't play. But It's funny because you think it's a horror movie. I don't.
It isn't a horror movie.
Okay.
But Bong Joon-ho does make a lot of horror movies.
Yes, yes,
Mother.
Yes.
But what I think about South Korean horror is that's what makes it exciting. It's not horror. There's these mixtures of genres. I always describe it as you could be singing a song and then the next you're chopping up a baby and eating it. Then it's like some Three Stooges. And then, you know, it becomes a mystery.
Yeah,
and
they
just mix every genre and it's just okay and it's interesting. No Aristotelian story structure at all. One of my favorites, you've got to watch this, okay. Bedeviled, the Korean Bedeviled.
I don't know it.
It's a fantastic movie that opens with a woman watching another woman get beat down by a bunch of men in a street. The woman falls on her car and is asking for help, and she just turns her head. And then the police bring her in because they see her on the CCTV and ask her to identify the assailants. She refuses. She goes to work, slaps some people around, you know, denies this old woman housing, and that's our protagonist.
Wow.
That's South Korean movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean... yes, sure. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, it's funny, my parents, they're not really into like movies or seeing things or like really anything except, you know, church and golf. But I spoke to my mom yesterday and she's like, oh, you know, me and dad, we went to go see Parasite. I was like, great, what did you think? And she said, It's very deep. It was a very deep movie. I was like, yes. And she goes, you know, the rich people were kind of bad, but also the poor people were kind of bad too.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, great.
Mm.
She's like, yeah, we're all kind of bad.
Like, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, we're all kind of bad.
Yeah. It's just funny to talk to them about art because we never do, you know?
And is it because, you know, they come from wherever they came from when you said they, like, what was the reason of their immigration? Was it?
Well, you know, in South Korea, when my parents, this is probably in the 60s in South Korea, but maybe even like earlier, maybe like late 50s. You know, my parents were born in 1940, 1941. And, Korea was like a third world country.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no economy. It was poor, poor, poor. Okay. So they my parents actually met in Germany.
Oh.
Yeah, there was this program between South Korea and Germany. Germany needed a workforce. So they brought people from South Korea to work.
But was it like enslaved work, like really treated bad work?
Well, the men were coal miners. So my dad was a coal miner and my mom was a nurse.
She had to be educated already.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was a nurse already at that time. And my mom, typically, like my mom did not have to do this, but typically the nurses were the ones who were cleaning bodies at the morgue. Mm. So they were doing grunt work, you know, right. Dangerous grunt. The men were doing dangerous.
Coal mining.
Yeah. Dangerous. But, you know, they were able to make a good amount of money and then send it back home or like save it. So my parents met in Germany, they got married in Germany, and they had my oldest sister in Germany before coming to the States.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think that their first language after Korean was German.
Right, and then English.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
it's kind of crazy because when they came to the States in the late 69, they lived in Park Slope. And because, you know, Park Slope was not Park Slope back then. And crazy enough, my husband and I moved into an apartment a few months ago in Park Slope. And I think we are like 5 blocks away from their first apartment.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy to think it's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just coming around.
Yeah.
World that we are living in.
Exactly.
Now, Wild Goose Dreams.
Sure.
The play you did at the Public, which I love.
Oh, thank you so much.
Such a beautiful story. And were there a lot of people of Asian descent working on that whole team?
Yeah. You know, so the costume designer was Linda Cho. She's Korean American as well. Clint Ramos did this.
I love Clint.
He's the best. And then the assistant director, Nana Dakin was on board, and Hansel Jung, of course, who wrote the play. her brother actually wrote some of the music.
Okay.
For okay. I think he wrote one of the songs. And then the cast was predominantly of Asian descent. It was a very diverse cast regardless.
Right. I mean, I guess for me, when you come and see something and you feel so moved, and then it's like, but I don't know, this could be like a misappropriation of the culture. I know it's not, it wasn't Korean though.
It was.
It was a Korean.
Okay. Yeah. Was that your experience?
I loved it, mm-hmm. But I always question when I love something from another culture of, is this somebody's gaze on the culture?
I
remember I saw that play, Pale Something, the Pale Ale.
Oh, Pale Ale. India Pale Ale, I think.
Yeah, I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. But I was like asking South Asian people in the audience, like, is this like—
resonating
this
with
resonate
you?
For you? Because it's not resonating
right,
with me.
Right. Interesting. I mean, that's an interesting observation of oneself. I feel like it was. I know for a fact, like my cousin is a goose dad. Like, you know,
a goose dad. Tell us, what's a goose dad?
So those are Korean men who stay in Korea to work while they send money to their kids, usually in the United States. So like the mom and the kid will go to the States so the kid can get an American education while the father stays in Korea to work to make the money and send it to them. So you're living this like parallel existence, but not really together. Mm-hmm. And that is so common in Korean culture, especially, and being Korean American, like I knew so many people who were kids of goose dads. Okay. Like it was just so common that like the dad was in Korea and wasn't around. And okay. So it's really interesting. I feel like there are other cultures that have something similar, but
West Indians. You know, I think all of the sort of immigrants from South and Central America.
Right.
But it doesn't just dads. It could be goose moms.
Yeah, yeah. I think particularly with Korea, it's dads. How come you don't say no when you
need no? That was my conversation with Peter Kim, star of Hackers and the upcoming 40-year version. Stay tuned for part two.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.